Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius, episode 32. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. If you want to learn more about the show, check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius. Leave a comment or a question for the show, become part of the conversation. My name's Luke and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant. How are you doing, Grant?
Hello, I'm good.
Excellent. Now, we've got lots to talk about in the episode today. We have some big announcements that happened a couple of weeks back. So we're a little bit late to the party on it, but it's big news. So it's not something we want to really kind of just ignore. The Pro Tour PPTQ changes and the GP changes. And also, as well as that, we're going to be having a look at some of the early tournaments that have come about now of Standard, seeing some of the decks that we are beginning to kind of take shape. And there's time, a couple of Modern Brews at the end as well. I've got into watching a bit more Magic content, what with having a little one and sometimes having to kind of just sit around. So having something on in the background is quite nice that I don't actually have to be watching, like religiously. And normally I couldn't actually stomach watching Magic content, like just watching. If it wasn't a Pro Tour, I'd find it really hard to kind of maintain interest. There's one guy in particular, Jeff Hoogland. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I know the name. I don't watch like any Magic at all to know anything about it.
No, that's fair enough. He used to play quite competitively. He does every so often play a little bit more competitively, but he's mainly kind of, he does this, he's like streams 30, 35 hours a week. It's his full-time job. And he'll basically play whatever junky deck people will tell him to play, as long as it's not completely ridiculous. There's always something interesting on his stream. So some interesting decks to look forward to if you want something fun and fresh from Modern. Stick around for that. This first thing, though, changes to PPTQs. I'm going to put a link to the original article. It's pretty big news. So the main takeaways from the article were the changes to Grand Prix and preliminary Pro Tour qualifiers. The most, I guess, in summary, is Grand Prix are now going to be called Magic Fests. And I guess this is a more of a marketing thing, the title change, just to kind of make it seem more like a Magic event, not just the tournament that goes on the weekend. Because, and I kind of get that, because I remember a lot of people I speak with, I talk to them about going to the GP, and they're like, oh, I'm not going to do the main event. I'm not doing that. I'm going to waste my time doing that. I'm going to check out the binders. I'm going to see the artists. I'm going to do this, that. So I do kind of buy in to a degree. These are not just a premier event for the weekend. It's a bit like a mini convention.
Yeah. I mean, like, you hear so many people saying that they want to go to Grand Prix, whatever, just to play the side events, don't you? So
yeah, totally. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, and I think, realistically, unless you're a grinder, then most people are not going to have the money or the inclination to do these kind of things regularly. So when GP London rolls around, the locals are going to be like, oh yeah, bang up for this little, what is going to be, like Simon jokingly calls it, a Magic holiday. And it kind of is, you know, you go there for a weekend, you have fun playing Magic. And if you're not doing the main event, you're probably having a lot more fun in a lot of ways, because you're not necessarily getting yourself psyched up to try and do well. You're just kind of going there to play some side events, mix with a different crowd of people you would normally do. So I kind of get that. The thing I'm not so hot on is the whole Channel Fireball kind of owning them all.
Yeah, it's a bit, I think we said it's a lot of the push towards this has been because of that entirely. So yeah, it doesn't have a good feel to it.
No, and I would have more confidence if, so I get they got to make money. So they're going to have their events set up in a way that maximizes their margins or what have you. But yeah. The biggest thing I take issue with is it just seems so shameless. Like a lot of these events, like the prize payout is very kind of cutthroat and just like single elimination drafts. They'll do tons of single elimination drafts and turbo drafts, and they'll run those like relentlessly throughout the day. Whereas it'd be nice to maybe have something a little bit different alongside that. So maybe do a bit more variety in those kind of events rather than just kind of grinding out the same rubbish. Because like, they have like these, you've got Frontier as a format, you've got like Pauper, and you've got Old School, Commander. There's so many different formats you could run. Like you could do Sit and Go Commander, like DICE does. You could say, right, we're going to, you know, Commander deck. Do it in enough advance. People can turn up with deck lists that they've made themselves. Because they'd just be like, right, you've got to bring your own deck list, Commander. If you don't have a deck list to it, you've got to fill it out. So people kind of know. And serious Commander players that are going to want to do, like, on-demand Commander events, they're going to have a pre-printed deck sheet. If they know that's going to be a thing, they will get that done beforehand. And they'll just have, like, four or five copies of their deck list and be like, right, boom, that's me. Just to kind of do more stuff, just more variety, really, rather than the kind of grindy. I've had it before where I'm sitting around and I'm thinking, right, I want to do a little quick-fire event, but I don't really want to do a single elimination or turbo draft where I do a draft, pay an inordinate amount of money, and then it's like, okay, I lost my first round because I got mana screwed or whatever. Didn't really get much mileage out of it. Doesn't really feel like a good event. But but the other stuff they do is pretty good. I mean, the organisation generally is pretty well done. And the other stuff, though, there was the changes to the PPTQ. So no more preliminary Pro Tour qualifiers. Instead, the way to the Pro Tour, through use of a handy little diagram, will be... so you know how at Grand Prix or Magic Fest, as they're going to be called, day two, generally you have a PTQ. On the second day, it tends to be some sort of bounce back kind of, okay, you didn't make day two, but here's a chance to get on the Pro Tour type event. So they still exist. And then you're going to have these open events and then invite-only events. And that's going to be your ways in. So the invite-only events will be, there'll be thresholds offered by, as they describe, professional tournament organisers and WPN member stores. So it remains to be seen what the kind of threshold will be, but I imagine it'll be pro points or rankings. What I find unnerving is professional tournament organisers and WPN member stores. That sounds like a lot of fluff, which basically is saying stores that have run PPTQs across the country, we're going to take that away from a lot of you now.
It basically says people we decide we want to run them.
Yeah, basically. I couldn't really think of a way of explaining it, but yeah, they're being very selective. And I don't mean selective in a good way. It's going to be a very cutthroat.
No.
Either you've got it or you haven't.
And then I said, the fact that Channel Fireball's recently got the whole ownership of all of it, obviously the coincidence of that happening together, again, just makes you feel quite bad when you've got like a monopoly thing as well as the people from the top deciding what can and can't run it kind of thing. Yeah, it doesn't have a good feel to it, does it?
No, it doesn't. And you think, okay, Channel Fireball, if they're thinking to themselves, right, they're setting the standard. But then Channel Fireball, because it's so big and it's now got this kind of hold, that's not a standard that any vendor that I can think of is going to be even close to being able to match.
Yeah.
They're going to have the infrastructure down. They're going to have the networking, the setup, everything kind of fleshed out and done to get that standard. And obviously, I know that they're probably not thinking that it's going to be the GP scale for these kind of events, but you can imagine the small store, you know, average Joe store, not fitting the bill of professional level kind of store. So that's the takeaway for me on this news. It seems like there's going to be less opportunities with these PPTQs going, less opportunities for your average player to get in. And I can imagine a counter to that, a lot of pro players might be thinking, well, that's good because it's got to be a certain standard, but it's nice to have the opportunity.
Like you said, a lot of stuff what you said is beneficial to people that do this kind of thing professionally or for a living or, you know, competitively anyway. But none of this favours someone that just wants to go and play some Magic or, you know, try and get into that kind of scene. I think it's going to be hard for people to break through if this is going to be the new way of doing things.
Yes, absolutely. And doing it online is not a very good experience anyway, I don't think. I don't think you want to divert people towards that. I'm kind of, because I qualified for an RPTQ very recently and I'm kind of a bit of trepidation about actually doing it online.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm really going to enjoy that experience. So, I mean, Magic Online is great, but I don't know. Grinding online feels even more of a grind than grinding in real life. but there we are. So, yeah, it's interesting news, and I really hope it's not going to be as unpleasant with how they decide who's going to get what as it suggests it might be. I guess it just remains to be seen. Grant, have you had much... Before we go on to Standard... There's a little segue into it because it's Guilds of Ravnica standard. Have you had much limited experience?
I did a pre-release and I did basically a sealed event with my cousin and a couple of friends. We bought a box and split it basically,
which
was quite fun. I went Golgari, which was good. what was worth saying about it is basically, so we split a box, so we had obviously six to do silver. Then we had one each for like the prize thing. So it was like 2-1-1-0 because there's four of us. And then just two to open. And obviously, so you've got nine packs in front of you. You have to pick the six, obviously, you're using for your pull. So we did all that and whatever. And the guy that won, he... Oh, no, hang on, no. My cousin didn't win. It was another Golgari guy, but he got, like, you know, better cards or whatever. But yeah, the two packs you put aside, one of them had, a Vraska in. We haven't seen a Planeswalker in the whole box yet. So we're like, oh, my God, Vraska, whatever. And then we opened another one. And it had another mythic in it, but then a foil Vraska behind it. So if he'd picked two different packs for his six, he would have had a Golgari deck the same, but would have had two Vraskas, one of which was foil, in this ridiculously casual sealed thing with it. It was just really funny, because we'd been playing for like 3 hours. Like, oh, then let's start the other two. I opened them up, it's like, oh, Vraska. Oh, and a mythic and the foil Vraska. Oh, okay.
Oh, that'd be so insane.
That was quite funny.
That's decent. Did you enjoy the format, though?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but obviously you're kind of... I mean, it makes sense, but you're kind of obviously shoehorned into going guild colours.
Big time.
Although, having said that, the PvT I judged on Sunday, like, there was loads of people, like, not necessarily splashing, but actually were just going three colours, and it was fine. But, for instance, one of the guys we play with, he hasn't really had much experience, so, you know, he doesn't really know much better, but he went effectively Simic for this limited thing, which, of course, was bad, because he was just using... you know, green that should have been used with black and blue that should have been used with red or whatever.
Yeah.
So obviously that's just, well, not very good decision making in terms of the format.
Yeah.
But there is something to that in the, you know, you looking around the room on Sunday where you've got 30 people, like, you know, it's, oh, is it, but is it the splashes this or is it the splashes this? Like, you know, you could see all these decks. Well, if you played in any other set, you generally have like not just four or five things going on. I think it's fair to say. So yeah, I enjoyed it, but I think obviously there is something to be said, the fact that it is quite built around certain cards or certain colours, certainly.
Yeah, it does feel kind of, I don't want to say restrictive, but you definitely feel like you've got your path kind of laid out before you. When you're drafting, not really thinking, right, am I going to draft aggro? Am I going to draft greens? It is very much like you say, right, what guild am I in?
You're going like, oh, what guild red did I open? Or, you know, oh, I opened, you know, two white rares and a green rare, I guess I'm going sort of Selesnya kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's very strange. I suppose the only kind of stuff you've got to play with is, like, if you don't take a gold card early, and it's weird because normally you wouldn't take a gold card first pick, but in this, especially when you're drafting, I'm much more open to forcing than I would normally be. So you open a strong guild card first pick, and you think, right, this is my lane and I'm sticking to it. You can potentially reap the benefits of that a lot more because staked your claim early. And I remember listening on Limited Resources, they're sort of saying, yeah, if you can identify the guild that's open, you're going to get paid off.
Yeah, this is true, yeah.
I'm saying all this, but when I did a draft at Dyson the other day, I went into Boros and sitting next to me basically was in Boros as well, to my left. I was like, how are you in Boros when I've been cutting? Yeah. Like, I don't get this. But the packs were just stacked up with it. I was still heavily, like, unaware of the fact he was cutting Boros in the second pack. So just weird. That was a weird draft. And Ben was happy because I was passing him all the good Dimir kill spells. Dimir deck, if you get all the Surveil stuff, is insane. Just going
to
say.
I don't know. I was about to say on Sunday, I didn't see any Dimir players do actually very well. It was all, like, people that splashed other colours with it that actually were able to do stuff. Like, all the Dimir matches just went to time and lost. Oh, okay. Drew.
I think you need the pieces. But Ben's deck was just absolutely nuts. So he had three of the four mana tap a thing and give something -4/-4.
Oh, so
he had three of those dead weights. He had this Dimir spy bug. And then the guy that drains you when you surveil. And then he had all the surveil stuff. So at one point, his Dimir spy bug was just a 5/5. Just a 5/5 minutes flyer. He was racing me. I was playing Boros. And he was just racing me with this bug, which I couldn't kill. I was just like, wow, I'm actually racing this Dimir opponent who's actually ahead of me now because he's beating me to death with his 5/5. Yeah, I really like it. I think it's interesting what you say about that. It's good that they're not all the decks, all the formats that they create for Limited are like that. So, you know, it's nice for a while to be kind of in these guilds. One thing I will say is Healer's Hawk is the real deal. If you're in Boros, I'd happily first pick a Healer's Hawk. Depending on what else is in the pack, you know, I'm happy to do it. Guild Limited is pretty sweet. that was the format that I did well in the PPTQ for. I actually went undefeated in sealed and in draft, which was
doing well.
Yes, that was, it was pretty sweet. One of the, I think it was one of the first PPTQs of the final PPTQ season, and I was kind of half-hearted about going into it because I hadn't practiced. I'd done two pre-releases. The first one I'd done, I'd swapped my pack because someone had over-ordered Selesnya. So I was like, oh, give me Selesnya. I wanted Golgari, but give me Selesnya. And then someone was like, oh, I haven't got a Selesnya pack. I was like, fine, give me Izzet. I don't care. Just give me whatever. And then I opened a Niv-Mizzet, and I was happy. And then did another pre-release where I was Golgari, and that's literally all the practice I'd had. Opened the deck on the day, and my sealed pool was like, I've never had a sealed pool which built itself so perfectly. And what I mean is I used every white card I had. Yeah. Like, I didn't have any sideboard white cards, and all the red cards I had were kind of just like the obvious cuts you would make, just not good enough. And then I used all the, obviously, the Boros gold cards. I was like, right, this deck's just built itself. And I had a Sacred Foundry as well, which was nice. I was like, this is really weird. And I looked at the other colours. I was like, there's just nothing here to pull me into, like the other colours. I did have the Venerated Loxodon as well. That card is something I want to talk about.
I've seen that card do so many things. It's crazy.
It's insane, isn't it? It's actually playing Constructed, which is why I kind of wanted to mention it in particular.
Which surprised me, but then also, you know, if you're doing tokens, I suppose it does make sense. But I think my cousin used it. I think it was something, I don't know if I've got the sequencing right for this, but I think it was like turn one player thing, turn two player thing. I think it was like turn three and I hadn't done anything. I think I played like the enchantment or something.
And
then, or like a little creature. And then I think it was turn three or turn four, I think he swung for like 12 or something because he just played Loxodon or something. I can't remember. I think he played Loxodon turn three. Tap a bunch of stuff. I think he had loads of soldiers and some other stuff. But yeah, it was something along the lines of like 10 damage or like 10 damage net either way or whatever because of the lifelink and stuff. It was just insane.
Well, you think, okay, that sounds about right, because if you think you've got two or three creatures or maybe four, you've got probably over two twos or X twos or whatever, you've got maybe like five or six damage across those creatures. The Loxodon literally just adds another five to that. So that makes perfect sense. I did live the dream of basically casting it for free, inverted commas, and just putting 5+1/+1s on the whole board. It's just horrible. But yeah, in Constructed, it's in a white weenie deck at the moment. So we're going to talk about Constructed, so I think this is a good segue. There is a mono-white aggro deck. The most recent PTQ online, this was joint third or fourth place, or it just wasn't classified what place it was not white weenie, it's weenie white.
I've got it on mine.
Cool. So if I'm right in thinking, it's just basically a shed load of one drops.
Yeah.
Banalish Knight, 3-mana.
Marshall, yeah.
Banalish Marshall, yeah. And then Venerated Loxodon. So you can just curve out into Banalish Marshall, or you just go one drop, and then turn two, one drop, turn three, cast a Venerated Loxodon. Actually, in fact, turn three, you go play another 2-1 drops. Cast Venerated Loxodon because you've now got 5-1 drops.
Yeah.
And they're all just massive now. So you take turn three off, but then you're just presenting like an inordinate amount of power. So unless they've got like a Settle the Wreckage or something, it's just vomits a whole bunch of white weenie dorks and Glorious Anthem effects on their creatures.
A couple of 2-drops. It's got Adento Vanguard. It's the indestructible thing you can pay life for, the Vampire one, and Remorseful Cleric, the graveyardy one, which is quite fun.
I like that.
And it's a 2-1 flyer, so yeah.
The flying's really nice. And
Benelia as well. History of Benelia is still doing, and probably still will do, quite a lot of work because it's a good card.
Yes, I saw someone selling a playset for like £60, or trying to get £60 for it, so.
Yeah, that's good. Knight of Grace is in it as well, which of course is important because it's a knight, and also just having 2-mana 2/2s of first strike and other stuff is quite fun.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I quite like, you mentioned the Remorseful Cleric there. Can you just read the text on that one?
Remorseful Cleric, so white 1/2/1 flyer. You can sacrifice him when it loads. I think it's exile all cards in target player's graveyard, I think it is.
Yeah, which is really nice because the reason I bring attention to that is, so Golgari at the moment in this online PTQ took up pretty much all the other spots in the top 8. There was a Jeskai control deck. So Golgari at the moment, when it first came out, everyone was obviously had their, like green, white and Golgari were very, very obvious choices alongside mono red, and people stupidly trying out various control decks week 1, which is just like the thing you should never do because you don't know what's happening.
yeah.
It boggles my mind that people are like, I'm going to try some janky three-color control deck whilst mono red is going to stave my head in. Like, it's just, no, no. Just wait for the format to kind of level out and then do it. The reason I draw attention to Remorseful Cleric is Golgari seems to be the deck to beat at the moment, according to this one event online. So I think this Remorseful Cleric could actually be really, really useful if you're looking for ways to beat Golgari. Now, it's just a 2-1 flyer and has the ability to remove all cards from graveyard. Now, Golgari, one of the primary things that have happened to me, I've basically been messing around with a vampire deck just for fun at the moment until the format kind of shapes up. So I've been on the receiving end of two backbreaking sequences in the Golgari deck. So the first one, if you just look at the first place one, you've got Find Finality, and basically them casting that is pretty horrible because they've got the board sweeper and then obviously the way to get things back. So then you've got Golgari Fine Broker to get things back as well. Yeah. One guy I saw was playing a zombie deck. I don't know how popular this is, but he was playing the card that targets a 1-cost, a 2-cost, and a 3-cost card and brings them back to the battlefield.
Got a lot of judge calls about that on Sunday. Cause like, do we have to have a target?
Yeah.
All of them. I was like, it doesn't say target, you're fine.
Yeah. I had this one guy who was basically playing this Golgari zombie deck. So it's not potentially as competitive, but he basically, it's like player one drop, player two drop, like zombies, block, trade off the zombies. I started to kind of build up a board presence and he goes, right, I'm going to cast Finality, sweep the board, keep one of my creatures alive. I was like, okay, that was horrible. And then the next turn, he goes, right, I will get a one drop, a three, two drop, and a three drop. And he got back a zombie. And then he got back, so he got back a one mana zombie, he got back the Grave Marshal, the two mana 3/2, which gets more zombies back if you exile stuff. And then he got the zombie lord back. So all of a sudden he just had this horrendous board. And I was like, what the hell is happening here? And then he had the card which when it attacks you pay X to return another creature back, and you had this Grave Marshal to get creatures back. The lesson for me is that Golgari, whatever direction you take it, it's grindy as anything. Like, all of these cards, so like District Guide draws you a card, Doom Whisperer surveils, Golgari Fine Broker gets you something back, Izoni gives you insects, Jade Light Ranger explores, like Ravenous Chupacabra, it's just, everything's just value. So,
when I was last playing Standard, it was that, you remember the hunt, what she's called, the weird elemental thing that sort of colours that you can get stuff back from your graveyard each turn.
Oh, yes.
I really enjoyed that one. Because it was a lot of like graveyard back stuff back from the graveyard, so it's kind of glad to see that that's still obviously a thing with Golgari. Because if I do want to play Standard again, I can also like maybe do Golgari with a bit of blue and play a deck similar to that. Because I found when I was playing a weird sealed event I was doing, I had a Golgari Fine Broker, and every time I played it, it was like, oh, I'll deadweight a creature, play Golgari Fine Broker afterwards, play deadweight again. Like that was just so much fun. Like I don't know if deadweight's ever going to be like constructed playable, but just doing like killing two creatures and then getting a creature for like very, very little mana was just insane.
I do like the interaction between Deadweight and Golgari Fine Broker, and I think that might be what really kind of encourages it to see play. And even just a couple in the sideboard against red, imagine just like, okay, Deadweighting their thing and then casting that and then Deadweighting another thing. Like that's going to make the red decks have to basically go bigger because they can't.
Yeah.
Wildgrowth Walker is really good against red as well. It's kind of like this jokey card from Ixalan, the 1/3 that whenever you explore, you gain life and it gets bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, that is everything a red deck doesn't want to see attached to a green creature.
Yeah.
It's just madness. So, that card's pretty sweet. So, the reason I mentioned about that white flyer, if you've got a lot of stuff that Golgari is leveraging from the graveyard, whether it's kind of passive recursion or they're going all in on the menagerie card to bring stuff back and just flip a game on its head, just having the 2-1 flyer with Grave Hate as a bonus could be quite interesting. He could actually see a little bit more play as a result. This sometimes, like when you play against Jund, like you in Modern, you don't always want to bring in your Grave Hate against Jund because they can just kill you with Hand Disruption and efficient creatures anyway.
Yeah.
Like you could bring in a Relic and they never see their Goyfs, and that was a waste of a sideboard slot. So, this could be a similar thing, right? You know, they just kind of play efficient creatures. You bring in Grave Hate against the Ravenous Chupacabra, it's still getting value against you. So
exactly.
Incidental Grave Hate could be something that is really good against it, which is really nice. Golgari seems to be the way forward with the format at the moment. It's definitely going to be a solid player, and a lot of the cards are really good. Nothing seems completely unfair, which is quite nice as well. Nothing seems like too OTT. The other deck in that top eight was Jeskai Control, basically playing what you might expect. What's that, the sweeper card?
The destroy everything toughness four or more.
No, it's the three. It's the really weird red and white one.
Which deck was this? Boros?
Deafening, no. Jeskai Control. It's Deafening Clarion. So it's the 3-mana sorcery.
Oh, yeah. It's everything you gain is lifelink and or do 3 damage to everything, right?
Yeah. Listening to Jerry Thompson's podcast, and he's basically saying that he seems to think this is one of the cards that's pushing Jeskai as the control deck of choice rather than any other kind of variant.
It's in standard or other formats?
In standard.
Okay, yeah.
Which kind of makes sense because it's a good 3-mana sweeper. I quite like the black sweeper as well, the soot one.
Oh yeah, I found that really when I saw it being played, it was very good.
Hmm.
Yeah, destroy all creatures with converted mana cost 3 or less, which I think is very relevant given that tokens are going to be a thing for a while now.
Absolutely, yeah. And they were very prevalent. I mean, I'm not going to go over too much in the at that one, but there was a team open in Columbus Star City Games event, and Selesnya tokens was very prominent in that, as well as obviously mono red aggro. There's a couple of like Boros Angels decks as well, which is, I like the idea that you can do that, just red white efficient spells and then angels at the top end.
Well, it's because of Resplendent Angel, isn't it, from N19?
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to build a deck around that, but it's just you getting a playset of any mythics is always going to be painful.
Yeah, it's just interesting tips there, but I don't know if it's going to have any legs that one, but yeah. It's pretty cool.
This angel deck, like, I'd love to be able to go, like, oh yeah, I'm just playing this. It's got, like, what, 4 Lyra Dawnbringers, 4 Resplendent Angels, 4 History of Benelias, 3 Aurelias. Like, it's just play sets of mythics everywhere. It's ridiculous.
I know. It makes me laugh.
And also now, of course, it sucks to be a new player now. But of course now it's like, you know, oh, the lands, oh, just, yeah, play set Sacred Foundry, play set Clifftop Retreats. Like, you know, of course before standard, you're like, oh, yeah, really cheap land base for standard. But now it's like, oh, you know, we're back to this again, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. But on the whole, though, it does feel like there's a nice amount of variety, at least at FNM level as well. Like the amount of different decks, you've got Mono Red, Boros Angels, Vampires, Merfolk, you know, these are still decks that people can play at a very very casual level and actually still be quite serviceable. There's tricks. Even, I don't know if you've seen it, the Mono Blue Mono Blue Tempo deck that exists.
I definitely want to see that. It's not good for all. I love the blue being aggressive for one.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just try and find it for you.
Is that the 3-mana Djinn card? Or?
Oh, yeah, big time.
And the I always wanted to build a deck around, is it Saheed or whatever the genie thing's called? Was it? Not so here. You know what I mean? The tap and artifact make it cheaper thing.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know what you mean. Yep. That'd be pretty spicy. Right, I'm just posting a list for you. Just discuss this, because this is a fun one. Like, if you're playing at any kind of level, I think you've got to be aware of this deck, because people are going to play it, because it's cheap. Pricing out here, Card Kingdom, total cost of this deck, $77. Which is fantastic. So, first of all, we're starting with 21 islands. what makes this tick is the Tempest Djinn. So basically, it's the 3-mana 0-4, is it? Or 0-3? 0-4 gets +1/+0 for each island you control. So it's a 3-4 when you cast it, and just gets bigger. And it's got flying. And then the rest of it is just blue tempo-y kind of creatures that are either unblockable or give you some kind of bonus when you attack. So like more like Marauder shrinking stuff when you attack. Merfolk Trickster.
Oh, Curious Obsession, such a good card.
Curious Obsession is a good card.
Such a good card. Well, particularly if you've got like so many unblockable creatures like this deck does.
Yeah. However.
Ooh, metamorphic Alteration. I've never seen this card before. This is fun.
Read it. I don't know what that one does.
2-mana enchant creature. Enchanted creature is a copy of another chosen creature.
Oh, how weird.
So if you go, like, oh, I've got a 1-1. Now it's a big djinn, or vice versa, whatever. Or go, oh, you've got a very nice, you know, big flying thing. I'll have that now. Nice. 2-mana. Awesome. N19.
It's a sweet deck. And then you got some card draw and some little 1-mana things to basically counter what they do in the form of Spell Pierce, Essence Scatter, Dive Down. I used to say it's 2-mana, but you know what I'm saying. So yeah, it's just tempo-y kind of counter.
You've got Wizard's Retort and you've got a lot of wizards in this deck.
Actually, you do. You do. I think it's a perfectly fine deck. I don't know if it just folds to red, but yeah, it's really nice. It's really nice. Like just getting Tempest Gym.
It's got Diamond Mares in the sideboard, so that's pretty good against red.
It's true. That'd be fine. That's all you need, right?
Yeah, 1/3 that gives you life is probably fine.
Yeah. So I like that this deck exists in a guild heavy format. It's quite nice.
Yes.
I think it's quite a nice little thing about Standard at the moment. You've got these cards that are like triple mono colour.
Yes.
Released right...
Oh, I don't want to play in your guild. All
yeah. Released right before this set. And you're like, it's an interesting juxtaposition because you've got... Everyone's thinking, oh, Chainwhirler is going to be... It's all going to be Chainwhirler format, Chainwhirler this, Chainwhirler that. But actually, you know, you've got a lot of different choices to make.
All about the gyms.
Yeah. The takeaway for me is Standard seems really great at the moment. Yeah, it's expensive, but it always is. And there's lots of different things you can play that are actually really reasonable. Even Vampires isn't too bad. I'm messing around with that.
Yeah.
Heck, if you go pretty hard on the Vampires, you've got Blighting. Like, there's the Arterial Flow card. Does 3.
Yeah,
discard 2, drain them for 3. So, like, Blighting, where you need to have a Vampire to get that, but you also get to gain life as well.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I've just linked in the chat that I liked was revolving around the card Experimental Frenzy, which we don't know what it does.
Oh, yeah.
4 mana, red enchantment. You may look at the top part of your library. You can play the top part of your library, and you can't play cards from your hand, and you can pay for it to play out. So basically, the deck is green-red and revolves around just having lots of cards that you can play and having mana and stuff. Mostly the limiting factor for those of you who play with this is that if you have a land and you haven't played a land, obviously you take the play out of the library, but if you have a second one, obviously you can't keep going deeper. But the way it gets around that is by having another favourite card of mine, because it's silly, is that Wayward Sawtooth card, that 3-mana 5/5 dinosaur that can't attack unless you've got the City's Blessing, that lets you play 2 lands a turn, or, you know, more if you've got several of them. So basically you just have him in play with Tremendous Frenzy, and then you just use the mana from loads of other stuff like elves and, well, other elves, to make loads of mana, keep playing until you hit land. When you do hit land, you can play 2 in succession if you want to keep digging.
That's really sick.
And then it's got like treasure maps to like obviously manipulate top of libraries and stuff. It's got explore cards like Jedi Ranger. It's also got Banefire as like a finisher. If you just go like, oh, I'm getting loads of lands, but it's not a problem because now I'm going to do 10 damage to you. Like that's quite fun. But yeah, it's got like Steel Leaf Champion and Crawl Harpooner from Ravnica, which is the 2-mana 3/2 with reach, which is crazy. But when it comes in, you give a creature... Hang on.
Yeah, plus X plus O and equal to the number of cards you've got in there.
You can fight it, yeah, so it kills big flyers, which is quite nice, given that, you know, that big demon is a thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I think this is pretty sweet. I don't know about the Harpooner. He seems a bit odd, but I like everything else about this. I like Explore with Experimental Frenzy. I think that's fantastic.
That's nice.
Because that's how you kind of get rid of extra lands if you are unfortunate to draw them, but you don't mind drawing them because at least it gets them off of your deck. One thing that I quite like about this idea, if I was going to explore it, would be maybe to look at Teemer and try and get some sort of Surveil in there.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. I like that.
But, I mean, I don't know what that would look like. That's just one of the... Immediately seeing this, I'm just thinking, oh, Surveil would be quite nice. But I don't know how many...
I think that's mostly difficult by the fact that most Surveil stuff is either blue-black or blue-black hybrid. But, of course, by being blue-black hybrid, it tends to have a lot of doubles or triples.
Yeah, could be a problem.
So maybe when we get the next batch of guilds and you get better colour crossovers, like obviously Simic or Gruul stuff, then this will have more things like that in it, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah, I really like Experimental Frenzy. I think one of the things that might kind of suppress it a little bit is the predominance of Assassin's Trophy and Conclave Tribunal. So
yeah, and also even just like enchantment removal being quite common with a lot of Selesnya cards like Knight of Autumn, that's quite relevant.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that people might have a sideboard answer to your Experimental Frenzy, but someone just getting value out of it, if they've been audacious enough to main deck a Knight of Autumn or just cast a Conclave Tribunal, just like losing out on that in the main is a bit rough. If that's kind of like your engine, if you like. But the card's nuts. I mean, it's pretty good. I love cards like this. You just get like paid off for doing silly things like not being able to cast cards. It's pretty sweet. That's Standard. So I'm getting quite low on time. So there's one thing I wanted to kind of share with you, which is this interesting deck for Modern. You know the card collector company?
Yes.
Yeah. So it uses that and a couple of quarter calling. So four collector company, two quarter calling.
Bio-visionary.
Bio-visionary, yes. So one of the things that Jeff does a lot on his stream is whenever you get a janky card like that, rather sarcastically, starts it off by saying Modern staple Bio-visionary. So yeah, this is not a card you will see very much.
Bugler, he says.
Yes. So, like, if you enjoy casting...
Quilling Oracle. Quilling Oracle is, like, one of my favourite cards.
this deck is, like, value with capital V. So, the land base is basically, like, a Batman base. Mana base. All the relevant shocks, fetches that you would expect. So, it's got four Noble Hierarch, Birds of Paradise. And then you're playing cards like Coiling Oracle, which says 2 mana, 1-1, reveal the top card of your library. If it's land, goes into play. If it's not, you draw it. Four Eternal Witness, which gets you to return something from your graveyard to your hand. Most common play pattern with this is cast Collected Company, hit an Eternal Witness, get your Collected Company back. Bio-Visionary, which is a 2-3, one colourless, one green, one blue. At your end step, if you control at least four Bio-Visionaries, you win the game. Four Militia Bugler to look through more creatures. Four Phantasmal Image, which is basically a clone. And what else was there? A couple of the card Mirror Weave, which basically turns all creatures in play into a copy of a creature of your choice. So the whole idea behind this is you just basically cast a card which draws you a card in some way. And you just keep casting something, getting value, casting something else. The collected company turns with this are just dumb.
Does this deck have a name?
He's called it Bio-Visionary Company. Which is really unoriginal. Fair. But yeah, I love this deck. The games he's played with it basically just ground out his opponents. Like, just completely... They just couldn't get through his... Like, he just had like an army of stuff. Just like playing random junky X3s until he just got to Bio-Visionary threats and then just won.
What was the name of the guy?
Jeff Hoogland. So J-E-F-F-H-O-O-G-L-A-N-D. He does a regular... He does daily Twitch streams, and his YouTube channel has like a whole host of all the videos he's done.
So it's fine, like grinding out a lot of decks, because this has like no interactional removal at all. So it's just, but it's fine with most Modern decks, even though it doesn't really do much to stop anything. It actually does okay.
Yeah, I mean, against, this isn't the most recent list. He's played it again. But against combo in the sideboard, you have Eidolon of Rhetoric. And you've got Rest in Pieces, Path to Exile, Spell Quellers, Tireless Trackers. So this deck, I've actually played it online a bit as well. It looks like just like the biggest pile, but he actually was just out. He played against Blue White a couple of times, or Jeskai, I can't remember which. But he was you just get them out of cards. You just grind them out of cards. Like if you're playing a bunch of X2s, whatever, it's like, hey, I'll hit you. And it's like, if they don't actually kill your stuff, then you just go, okay, fine. I'll just kill you with these little X2s, X3s. Tap out for a Jace and you've cast Collected Company. All of a sudden, you've got a couple of Bio-Visionaries in play and you're like threatening to kill them with the next clone you draw. The Bio-Visionary...
This is literally my format. This is what I play. I play piles that aren't actually piles.
The cuts he made... I mean, the version... I played a version of this and I got rid of the Mirror Weaves and weirdly enough, the Bio-Visionaries. And I just played Reflector Mages and just went a bit harder on just valuing people, just like value it. The other version I tried was this, but without Bio-Visionaries, cut a few Birds of Paradise, and I played the Devoted Druid, Walking Ballista, Vizier of Remedies combo.
Oh.
So basically it was that, but with all these extra value cards in here. So you had the primary plan of just casting dudes for value, but then all of a sudden you just kind of either outvaluing them or slowing the game down to a point where you then just combo off and kill them. So there's loads of other ways you can do it. It's just great fun because you just dirtle so much.
Look, I'm pleased. I like it.
No, I'm glad you approved. I want to try and find this Grishol brand. It was a Grishol brand kind of deck, but it was a bit different. It was just this Abzan thing. I'll save it for the next time. I'll give you a little taste of what it was. So it was Ponza and Grishol brand combined.
Okay.
If you can imagine such a thing. And I'll just leave it there for now. And I'll try and find it and bring it on to the next time. Because it was super fun and just ridiculous. So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening and stay tuned for more.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Just to interrupt you, I'm on Tapped Out looking for a deck we're going to talk about later.
Uh-huh.
And I've just come across a commander deck someone's built using Sekhqua, you know, that weird orc from Cold Snap is like jammed colours.
No.
But anyway, Sekhqua is his name. And they've called the deck Seki Seki $5.
Seki
Seki.
That took me a second, but that's wonderful.